You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 287. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and I'm coming at you in high fidelity, crisp, perfect, Dr. Dre style, Steven Spielberg style, John Williams style, high fidelity, top premium sound on my brand new microphone. A lot of people are saying, how come John always sounds like he's in a garbage can on the Punk News Podcast? Well, now I'm crisp, tight, clarity, so you get high production values here in the Punk News Podcast. Adam White is not here today. He's got two sick kids, and he's probably sick himself. So there's a lot of puking, a lot of doo-dooing in the pants going down at Adam White's house. So he's got a lot on his hands, both figuratively and literally. And so today we've got a special guest, someone who I wish would be on the Punk News Podcast more often. Maybe she will be on the podcast more often. She is. You all know her. Actually, you all know her, but you don't know you know her. This is Samantha Barrett, news editor. Samantha Barrett, Sam Barrett, Sammy B. How are you doing? How you be?
I'm great. It's, you know, cold.
So a lot of listeners might not know that Sammy B lives up there in the big NYC or next to the NYC. What's happening in the big NYC, Sammy B?
It's really cold, and we're still waiting for garbage pickup, so nothing much.
Have you been in any cool or hot shows out there in one of the meccas of the music world?
Always. I'm always at a show, hence why you see all my photos on the lovely Punk News Instagram. Recently, I saw the farewell show for Banquets. Lots and lots of tears. I cannot explain to you how much that band means to me, and you know, just spending so much time going to see them, being that they're, I guess, local for me.
And they have it. And actually, she brings up a good point: is if you see photos on the Instagram, it's probably Sam, Ricky, or myself. If it's an incredibly shitty photo, it's me taking it. Because I take it with my cell phone, and for some reason, I'm horrible with taking pictures. Sam, actually, is pretty good. But we're also here with the other photo taker. You all know him. You all love him. We are here with reviews writer, news editor, Tricky Ricky Frankel. Tricky Ricky, what's happening over there in the L.A. scene? What's happening?
You know, it was like 85 degrees here.
Really?
But, yeah, it's getting hot for some reason. But that El Nino is kind of not happening, I guess. Let's see. I went to, I saw Toy Guitar open for the Loved Ones at the Troubadour.
And awesome.
That fucking ruled. Toy Guitar killed it. And, the Loved Ones were very cool. That was, a suggestion of Mark Little to go see. So, and honestly, I would have gone to see Toy Guitar regardless, but, that was a cool show.
I recently saw Paul Collins and the Beat. Ricky and Sam, do you two know who Paul Collins of Paul Collins and the Beat is?
I do not.
I do not.
You guys know the Blondie song, Don't Leave Me Hanging on the Telephone?
Yes.
No.
Sam, you don't know Blondie?
I know Blondie, but I don't know that song. I'm really, really bad with like music that's not contemporary to punk.
Well, there you go. Well,
or pop.
well, if I may counter, Blondie was in the early CBGB scene. However, Paul Collins, he is one of the guys. Actually, he didn't write that song, but he was in the Nerves. The Nerves wrote that song, and after the Nerves broke up, he formed Paul Collins and the Beat, and he recorded a whole bunch of different songs of power pop. If you like power pop, he's kind of one of the main power pop guys. He's one of the inventors of the power pop genre. I'm sure you've probably all heard a bunch of his songs. on different on the radio or even in the movie Caddyshack, and I saw him and he was great. Like, he just sounded so great. So I'm gonna play one of Paul Collins' songs off the record, The Beat. If you like power pop, you should seek this out. Let's play Workaday World. Workaday World, one of the bigger hits by Paul Collins and The Beat. And we are back, and I changed my mind. I said I was going to play Workaday World, but we actually played Working Too Hard. That was Working Too Hard. I totally changed my mind. Let's talk about some news. Just as a quick point, as you all might know, we are sponsors of Punk Rock Bowling. Punk Rock Bowling, out of the blue. We didn't even know about this at Punk News. They announced a Denver set of dates. It's June 2, 3, and 4 out in Denver. Most of the heavy hitters from Punk Rock Bowling and the other two sections are going to be there. I know Flag is going to be there. I think 88 Fingers Louie is going to be there. Miller Collins is going to be there. DOA is going to be there. And so if you're into Punk Rock Bowling, I got to say the whole festival's shaping up to look pretty cool. Let's talk about today's news. The former Org Corps champion, is he still the Org Corps champion? The debate is hot. The guy that used to take up 40% of Punk News discussion, Brian Fallon, he has released a new solo tune. The solo tune is called Smoke. It's going to be off his upcoming album. The album is called Painkillers. That's out March 11. Sam Barrett, did you dig Brian Fallon and his new tune?
This tune I did dig. I actually saw him recently play Webster Hall, and he actually played most of this album, and it sounds pretty okay to me.
Ricky, what's your take?
You know, I've said this on the podcast before. Like, I'm not a Gaslight Anthem fan. For some reason, whatever Brian Fallon kind of releases doesn't really sit well with me. So I was not into this that much. But it's not like I hate him. It's just kind of like, this just isn't my cup of tea.
So, you know, Sam, a lot of people bring up the Bruce Springsteen connection with Brian Fallon. Do you think that's overstated or understated or stated just right?
I think it stated just right for what he was trying to do for, I guess, maybe two of Gaslight's albums. I think it sounds to me that he might be stepping away from that, which I do appreciate, because you kind of can't follow that torch forever. going to the show and seeing him with, you know, the Crows, was, you know, it gave me a new perspective on where he's trying to go. To me, it sounds a little bit on the mainstream end, You know, which I completely see because I've been following Gaslight Anthem for a really long time. Like, you know, going to basement shows, going to see them, you know, being, I guess, in close proximity to Jersey. So, you know, he's not going back to Sink or Swim. Sink or Swim is one of my favorite albums, like, ever. But, you know, so I do respect him for that, but I do wish that he went back to Sink or Swim.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been trying. I tried so hard with Gaslight, and then I've said this on the podcast before. I actually saw them, and I didn't make it through the whole show. Maybe I'm missing something. I found their live show boring. But Against Me was opening, so that's why I was really there. But I don't know. For me, this rubs me the wrong way for some reason. I don't know why.
You know, I think Gaslight Anthem was one of the bands that really got with, you know, the punk rock blowback. After a band gets big enough, they get smashed by, I guess, their former audience. Can you guys think of a band that maybe started out small, got big, but then never really got the smash back? Or why do you think punk rockers do that? Like, when a band, like, goes beyond, I guess, their ambit or their gravitational pull, if you will, then the punk rockers kind of turn their back on bands. It kind of happened with Poor Against Me, although Against Me kind of won a lot of their fans back. It certainly happened with the Gaslight Anthem. It certainly happened with Green Day. Why do you guys think that's an aspect of punk rock?
Well, you know what? I guess being in a band, well, I've never been in a band, but, like, you know, I guess seeing bands for a really long time and seeing that, you know, they want to be able to aspire to make money off of this. A lot of bands, especially the stuff I listen to, you know, they don't make a lot of money doing this. A lot of the times I say, you know, punk don't pay, which is the case with a lot of bands. And I do see a lot of bands, like, you know, even Banquets, like, you know, you get to a certain point and it's just not working anymore. And, you know, you decide to end the band.
You know, I've been wondering this myself too. And I forgot what episode of that podcast was, but on the Anxious and Angry podcast, I think it was with Kevin Seconds, and they were talking about the concept of what selling out really means, and this kind of relates to that. And I think Kevin put it really perfectly into perspective. It's not about them making money. I don't think that's really where the anger is with when bands get big like the Gaslight Anthem. It's, you know, the punk scene is very close, tight-knit, and it's kind of like a, not like a secret society, but it's kind of like a good band, good small band is usually like a well-known secret. And once they get popular, not necessarily rich, but when they get popular and go pretty mainstream, it's like the secret's out. And like that like shared secret that you had with everyone else, with those few people about this awesome band, now the secret's out and it's just not as fun, or like, and it might not seem genuine, even though the music still is. Mm-hmm. But once the secret's out, it's kind of like, ugh, well, now I'm going to move on to the next thing that no one else knows about that much. So that's
Like, even going to certain shows, like, you know, going to a Gaslight Anthem show, like, you start seeing a shift in just the people, the type of people that shows up at the shows. And, you know, my husband and we pretty much had it one of the last times we saw Gaslight Anthem, and it was at Terminal 5, which is a huge venue in New York, you know, where we got frisked in. And, you know, there's thousands of people at this venue just to see this band. Like, you know, once it gets to that place where we don't see punks at these shows anymore, I think that's that turned us off about seeing Gaslight. You know, the only reason why we went to go see Brian Fallon was because it was a very small venue. So we were hoping that certain types of people weren't there.
Yeah, I mean, I found when I went, when I saw them, I found it to be a very bro-ish audience. Vibe. You know, I mean, especially, I think it's an LA thing, but I saw them at the, I saw them at the Hollywood Palladium, which is, out here, which is which also is a really big venue. That's where they had the Fat Wreck 25 tour, and I think it was like October, September. And what happens at LA shows, maybe it's not LA shows, but what I've noticed is that the smaller, only the real fans come for like the smaller bands that like know them, but then like everyone shows up for the headliner later on. And that's exactly what happened with the Gaslight Anthem. You just got all these, just an enormous amount of, and it was a sold out show. It was just an enormous crowd of very bro, non-punk rock thinking or even aware people. And that's when I just said, you know what, I'm not digging the show, one, and two, like, this kind of got just really kind of weird, and I'm just like, this, and yeah, I just left with a bad taste in my mouth of that show.
What do they do that you like that annoys you at a show? Like, what at the show do these bro guys do that annoys you? I'm curious. I mean, honestly, I don't go to a whole lot of punk shows where they're a very bro-ish audience. I either go to, you know, like pretty punk shows where it's mostly punks, or I go to like, you know, big rock and roll or hip hop shows or big rock and roll shows. I remember I saw Gene Ween. And I got really annoyed because there's a bunch of like really high people that were really being annoying, like touching me and stuff. And so that's a different story. But like, what annoys you about? Like, do they do stuff to you?
They smoke a lot of weed, and you know, I don't smoke weed myself, and I don't stop anyone from smoking the stuff. But they do a lot of that, and they do start odd little fights, like, you know.
At Gaslight Anthem? Really? Like,
at Gaslight Anthem, yeah, like fights in the middle of the crowd. You know, I was at a Terminal 5 show, and I believe it was that Bad Religion Offspring tour. And that was very, very bro-y, even though, you know, that's normally not a Bad Religion show.
but it is Offspring.
It's definitely, I was about to say.
Yes, totally. It was totally like Offspring and Pennywise.
There you go.
That brought that out. But like, there was one part where like I was standing there and so Smells Like Teen Spirit came on, but it was a techno version of it, and they all started moshing to it. And I was going, where the hell am I?
Yeah,
it was like such a surreal feeling.
Yeah, and usually they're pounding down PBRs, too, and doing stupid drunken stuff. And it's not like the punk shenanigan drunken stuff where it's like, okay, you know what, that's probably going to happen. They're just like, they just go with their, I guess, whatever, their frat bros or whatever, and they just kind of ruin the vibe. And just think they own the place.
Well, when punk drunks do weird things, they're doing it and it's actually funny, but they're doing it respectfully in the pit, you know?
Yeah,
it's
they know that sort of unspoken camaraderie that's in the pit.
There's etiquette.
Yes. Like if someone falls, you pick them up.
Not after being a jack. See that, like if you go to like hardcore shows, sometimes people are jackasses. Like actually, when I saw Nightmares down in Atlantic City, there was like people like throwing punches and stuff. So when that guy goes down, I say you kick that guy. You know what I mean? I mean, see, I like.
Well, we're talking about a Gaslight Anthem show.
So it's fair enough. Fair enough.
We're not exactly. This is not. This is nowhere near my Nightbirds at all.
No.
So there you have it. Punk etiquette. Be a good punk when you go to a punk rock show. Talking about going to places, Ray Rocket. That's Ray Carlisle of Teenage Bottle Rocket. Kind of out of the blue, he announced he's going to release a solo album. I think he's going to go by as Ray Rocket. And they released the album's out April 1st. Via Rise Records. He released the first video, and it's called Do You Want to Go to Tijuana? The video is actually a pretty high... It's a simple video, but it's pretty high production. I gotta say, I'm not a huge Teenage Bottle Rocket fan, but I actually really, really dug this song. I don't know why. To me, it sounded like... Well, I dug it for two reasons. First, it sounded like the better parts of Later Day Ramones, like Howling at the Moon, Pet Sematary, those kind of mid-tempo, melancholy, reflective Joey Ramone songs. That's exactly what this sounded like to me, to tell you the truth, or not exactly, but very similar. It had that kind of vibe. I also dug it because I really couldn't figure out what the song was about. Was it about a girl? Was it about his brother? I really couldn't figure out. I mean, I know, I think it's kind of like a combination of just different people that he's having trouble relating with. But I thought this song was actually surprisingly good. I do wonder if it pulled out the heartstrings a little too much, like... Ricky, when you were watching this video and listening to this song, did you feel manipulated?
No, I didn't. You know, it was just him and his son. Like, that was it. And just spending time. I think if, like, they were, like, seen, like, doing, like, what the music was, like, playing over them, like, talking something about something, like, serious or something like that, or hugging, or like laughing and rolling around on the grass or whatever. Like, yeah, that would have been trying to tug at my heartstrings. I've been like, nah, this is kind of weird. But you know, I originally was not a huge Teenage Bottle Rocket fan until their last album dropped. I'd been following them and listening to their stuff, but I never really caught on with me. Then Tales from Wyoming comes out last year. I really, really liked it. And then, I got to tell you, I really liked this song to the point where I pre-ordered it. I pre-ordered the album. So I'm hoping for good stuff. I think this could be a really, really good acoustic album or solo album. So I was surprised that it was coming out on Rise. This seemed like it would be something that like he would go back to like, you know, Red Scare for.
Well, he probably has a contract. I mean, you know, Teenage Bottle Rocket has a contract with Rise.
Right.
I bet it's a multi-album deal, and I'm almost sure I certainly don't know, but I would guess they have an exclusivity contract that if he's going to release a side project, it probably doesn't count towards their deal for Teenage Bottle Rocket, but they probably have to go through Rise Records.
Yeah. So that definitely makes sense. But yeah, thumbs up for me. This could be very cool.
Yeah, I watched the music video and I thought it was a very, very cute music video. You know, it's like I think he must have specifically wanted something to do with his son, being that, you know, there was a lot of coverage about his brother, and one of the, I guess, photos that went out in press was his son, you know, when his brother died. So yeah, I can't figure out myself what the song is about. I guess once I get my pre-order copy,
yeah, I'll be
reading the lyrics and figuring it out. But yeah, I have high hopes for this record. I caught on to Teenage Bottle Rocket late as well. I caught on to them around the Freak Out stage. And, of course, like, you know, started getting into their back catalog. And, you know, I will always go see them whenever they stop by.
Yeah, that was something for me, too. Like, I wasn't a huge fan of their early stuff. But then, like, I totally would go see them live anyway. For me, they're a very fun, they're a very fun live band, and that's how I got into their recorded stuff.
They're super, super fun. Like,
oh, yeah. I've
never seen a band that, like, even if you don't know them, like, you'll have fun go see them. They have, you know, weird stage antics, like, you know, a masked dude with signs with the sign, and stuff. Yeah. you know, and I totally see them like, you know, playing with Mass Intruder forever and ever and ever. So, yeah.
He covers Pet Sematary on this album. I didn't even realize that.
Perfect.
This is something that I've been thinking about a while with Gwar. You know, Dave Brocky's been dead almost 2 years now, and Gwar still can't shake the fact that their main guy died in fairly tragic circumstances. Will Teenage Bottle Rocket ever be able to shake the tragedy that follows them, or work through it? Or, I mean, I'm assuming that Ray had this album in the works before his brother died, because this is only like 3 months after his brother died, right? This album,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it had to be in the works before his brother died. Will a sense of tragedy be forever tied to Teenage Bottle Rocket? Will they be able to shake it, or will they be able to work through it? Or I mean, what do you think?
I think right now I think what they'll do is they're always going to have that thing. I mean, it's not like Brandon was just a member of the band. You're talking about the lead singer's twin brother.
Mm-hmm.
That's some heavy shit. So I think they'll always kind of have that, but like, it'll always be, it'll be like just a positive vibe about, and just remembering him. Especially like when they play live or whatever. I hate to compare him to this, but Pennywise lost their bassist, and that's why they play Brohim at the end of every song. Mm-hmm. So, but it's not like something depressing comes over the crowd, and it's a weird, and it's like a dark vibe or anything like that. I think what it'll be is kind of like, you know, like, hey, Brandon would have wanted us to continue on, and we're doing it, and let's just keep going. I think we'll really see it when they release a new full length, whenever they decide to, and we'll see how they do. I think that'll be the real test.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, like, I feel like, you know, from everything I've read, you know, they're going to try to push on with, the band for as long as they can, because that's what, Brandon would have wanted. You know, he wouldn't have wanted, you know, the band to stop just because he's not in it anymore. Like, you know, a lot of bands are going to have to do that. Like, you know, recently Rob from Iron Sheik, we lost him, and, you know, the band, they're going to figure things out. I haven't, you know, I lost a friend as well, and it's been hard for everyone. But, you know, we just have to live on and do what we got to do.
Well put. And speaking of people that are doing what they do, Brendan Kelly is definitely doing what he does with his new song off the upcoming Falcon album. Of course, the Falcon album is a... Sam, who's in the Falcon? It's Brendan Kelly and what, two other guys?
It's Brendan Kelly. I believe it's Dave House of, you know, The Loved Ones.
And one of the other Lawrence Arms, isn't it?
I believe Dan's in it from Alkaline Trio.
There you go.
And there might be one more.
The Falcon are going to release.
It's Dan and Neil Hennessy.
Neil Hennessy.
Yeah, Neil.
I think you're right there, Sam. I think what's his name? Dave Howells was in it for a little while. They're releasing their new album. The album is called "Gather Up the Chaps," and of course, it's Brendan Kelly's fascination with S&M and sex. As he's always talking about on Twitter, if you follow him. The new single is called Hasselhoff Cheeseburger. The album's out March 18. Sam, what did you think of the tune, and what did you think of the Minor Threat referencing cover?
I'm so about this tune. It's not even funny. It came out, what, like a day ago or 2 days ago?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I've been listening to it nonstop. I'm super stoked. You know, I love the Lawrence Arms. I love most of what Brandon Kelly does. I love, you know, the Loved Ones. So I'm super hopeful for this. Super, super, super hopeful.
Yeah, I'm with Sam on this one. Anything Brendan Kelly does, I'm on board. This song rules, and this I think this will be another must pre-order, because this will be definitely one of the bigger releases of the year, I think. Let's see. In terms of the Minor Threat reference, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was fun. I think it's a great parody and stuff like that. I just wish, I don't know. I just wish things. I for some reason think that bands are kind of going into this like derivative kind of area where they just take where they will they'll take something from a long time ago and make an ironic or funny version of it.
I hate when bands or record labels or websites do that. Yeah, I hate that. Yeah,
but isn't that like the entire shtick about this band? Oh. Like the Falcon's all about like doing weird things.
Oh, for sure. That statement was more just about the over. I mean, just a bunch of things I've been seeing, not just this. I think this was funny. I mean, I might be in the minority here. I think Brendan Kelly's funny on Twitter, and I think the Nihilist Arby's thing was also pretty funny. So, yeah. But again, the song rules. I'm on board.
I didn't realize he was so hairy. He's incredibly hairy.
Like, I don't think that's him.
That's not Brendan Kelly?
I don't think so.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Why did I say that? Wrong tattoos? Are we looking at the same picture? Like the one with the guy in the Minor Threat pose?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're looking at the same picture, and I don't think that's him.
Why do you say that?
Because I think I saw a...
Let me look at it. Let me Google Brendan Kelly's, and I'll look at his arms, and we'll know for sure then.
I'm pretty sure that it was a friend of theirs that posed for it. I remember reading something about it, I think.
Let's see here.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. It looks like the arm tattoos don't match up. Yeah, I think
they don't. This guy has a lot of black and white ink.
You see, Brendan Kelly's got a lot of tattoos, too. Brendan Kelly's right arm has kind of looks like a dragon or maybe a Aztec motif. This guy's got, like, flowers on his arms or something. Tough to say. I wish I could get a better picture of a... Oh, here we go. Here's one. Yeah, he's got like a dragon on his left arm. Does this guy have a dragon on his arm? I'm sure this is interesting. Tough to say. It's folded over. Ah, well, I guess we'll just have to answer that question later.
Yeah, I think someone has to pre-order this album and answer it.
Here we go. Brendan Kelly's got like a flag or something on his right arm. Does this guy have a flag on his right arm? No, it's different. So this is not Brendan Kelly. Why did I assume this was Brendan Kelly? I guess I just thought it was a Falcon. I mean, it's the same general body type, right?
I mean, would we all be that shocked if this was Brendan Kelly?
I don't think
probably not.
But yeah, I mean,
why were you guys? What's the word I'm looking for? Why did I think it was Brendan Kelly? How come you guys were so sure that it wasn't?
I remember reading it somewhere. I forgot where though.
Fair enough. I'm sure this is very interesting to the Pungies podcast. Pungies podcast listeners, is that Brendan Kelly? I don't know. Anyway, John Justice of the Cro-Mags is releasing a new album. It's going to be under his band Blood Clot. Blood Clot was a band that existed before the Cro-Mags, after the Cro-Mags, and they're existing again, although it's all different guys. Blood Clot is basically just the name for John Joseph and the band that he's with that's not the Cro-Mags. The lineup on this band is stacked. Todd Youth on guitar, Joey Castillo on drums, and Phil Cavano on bass. I got to say, the Hardy Flanagan album from this year was really, really good. I was thinking, I don't know if John Joseph is going to be able to match up to that, to tell you the truth. This album is looking stacked. I'm really excited to hear this. I don't know if there's a whole lot. One notable thing to say about this is he was signed to Metal Blade Records by Michael Alago. If you don't know who Michael Alago is, you should listen to Damien Abraham's Turned Out a Punk podcast where he interviews famous A&R man Michael Alago, who actually was extremely important in signing punk bands as well as heavy metal bands, including Metallica. Ricky, play a tune.
Play a tune? All right. God, I think it was December, maybe late November, I saw Rats in the Wall at a small bar called the Redwood in downtown LA, and it was a great show, but they had a band open for them called Heartless Folk. They're out of Northern California. They're kind of, I think they're in the, they're one of the, I think they're one of the mid-size or bigger bands, that play Gilman, fairly regularly. And Rats in the Wall and the Heartless Folk, I think, will be putting out a split later on this month. But I saw Heartless Folk. They ripped real hard. Like, they were really good. So I'm going to play one of their songs from their This Is It EP. This is A Trip to Hell, Two Seats Included by Heartless Folk.
A Trip to Hell by Heartless Folk. Check out the new split with Rats in the Wall featuring Brad Logan of Leftover Crack. As a side note, you know, one time I was at a Leftover Crack show and I was talking to people. A lot of people, nobody knows who Brad Logan is. They're like, oh, Leftover Crack's my favorite band. I love Leftover Crack. I'm a huge fan. I'm like, oh, you know, do you know Brad Logan? I mean, like, what do you think of Brad Logan? They're like, who's Brad Logan? I'm like, he's only the other main guy in the band that's been in the band since the beginning. You know what I mean? It's like I was stymied by the fact that people only know Stizza. I guess they don't know who Alec Bailly is, and they might know who Ezra is, and or Arab Abigeon, but they really only know who Stizza is, which I don't know if there's any.
Either they're new Leftover Crack fans, or they just haven't done their homework, or just haven't been paying attention. I mean,
I think a lot of Leftover F minus, Crack fans...
Leftover Crack and F minus did that split. Together, I mean.
Actually, technically, it was the Crack Rock Steady 7, Ricky.
I apologize. You're right.
But I think honestly, I think a lot of Leftover Crack fans just don't pay attention. To tell you the truth, you know.
I just think they just want to see Stizza just, you know, squawk out the lyrics and you know mosh to, you know, Stop the Insanity or whatever.
Well, speaking of insanity, Pup. They've released a lyric video for their song DVD. I'm not DVD. DVP. We talked about that song, I think, 2 weeks ago on the podcast. However, the lyric video was blowing up all over the internet. People that I know are not into punk were posting this video because in the lyric video, it basically takes a bunch of old Nintendo dialogue screens and then puts in the band's lyric, which is pretty clever. So, you know, people hate lyric videos. I know Adam White hates lyric videos. I don't really hate lyric videos too much. They don't really bother me. I like reading the lyrics. But I think this was a super clever way to do it. The lyric video, is it here to stay? Was this a clever way to do it? And, I mean, if you're going to do a video like this, isn't this essentially a music video? Why do you need to make a lyric video? Although it was clever. You know, I don't know. Sam, what do you think?
I'm not always for lyric videos. I think a lyric video has to have something super captivating, that grabs the attention of your, you know, the audience. And I think that's what works with this music video, well, lyric video, so well, is because a lot of the people that is listening to Pup are in their 20s, 30s. Yeah. So, you know, they grew up playing these games. You know, or at least knowing about it. Plus, like, you know, this music video, kind of like a lyric video. Oh my God, I must be like confusing the two. Maybe it's the same. It probably is the same. A music video, this music video and lyric video.
Well, I would say that a lyric video is a subgenre of the music video. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and this completely has lyrics embedded in it. But again, like, it does kind of read as a music video somewhat. You know, when you're playing games, yeah, there are bubbles that comes up that, you know, that tells the story of a game. So, yeah, so this video reminds me a lot of, like, Mass Intruders videos, lyric videos, and I love those because they're super smart, super clever, super artsy. I'm an artsy fartsy type of person, so it totally works for me.
Yeah, I think the problem with lyric videos is the opposite of what Sam just said. They're not creative. They're essentially, you know, karaoke
songs
that you just look at and you're like, and at that, I mean, if you're gonna do a lyric video that's not creative like this Pup one, you might as well just stream the song and not care, because I mean, what's the point? It's less work just to stream it, unless you're gonna do something really cool like this. I think the reason why you are also getting so many non punk enthusiasts into this, because you know, late 80s, and I know for sure that 90s kids love nostalgia stuff. They love this. They love, you know, I have a bunch of friends that like love watching, you know, 90s Nickelodeon. I still play Nintendo 64 every once in a while. I mean, James Bond, GoldenEye is the bomb.
See, Rick, I think it's funny that you say, like you're like, oh, yeah, man. I remember the old machines, like Nintendo 64. To me, Nintendo 64 is like the new machine. For me, what? The old machine is the 8-bit Nintendo, or maybe the Super Nintendo. But I'm more the 8-bit Nintendo. Sam, Sam, you're a little bit younger than I am, aren't you?
A little bit.
Sam, the Nintendo 64, is that an old school video game to you? Or is that, to me, that's a new school video game.
It's old school to me a little bit. Yeah.
I think it's funny.
The original Nintendo is what I was playing because my parents are poor. So
I think it's funny when I see adults like talking about Pokemon, and I'm like, Pokemon, that's like what little kids were into. Like people, like adults are like, oh yeah, it's like Pikachu or whatever. And I'm like, I'm like, dude, you're an adult. Like, how do you know about Pokemon? He's like, I watched when I was a kid, jackass. I was like, oh, when Pokemon was on, I was already kind of becoming a young adult, you know?
I mean, we're going to get way too off course here. But I mean, I think like Nintendo is reissuing those original Pokemon Game Boy cards, Game Boy games for the 20th anniversary.
Oh Lord.
I know. So, I think even you can call me old now, but,
Ricky, are you a Pokemon guy? Do you like Pokemon?
Not now, but maybe when I was like, you know, when I was six and I didn't have anything else to do. But back to Pup. This song rules. This album is going to be phenomenal. These guys at this point can do no wrong. I loved their debut album. And I hope they'll come back here. Oh, actually, no, they're coming back here. I'm seeing them in June. Never mind.
Yeah, they're playing here in New York in a really small venue. I think it's like 200 caps. St. Vitus, my favorite venue ever.
Have you seen them before?
Yes, I've seen them a couple of times, and they're always fun. I actually saw them at Palooza in last year, I believe. Yes. And the people of Montreal lost their shit. It was amazing. So yeah,
everyone loses their shit at their shows. It's insane. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's just amazing.
Well, speaking of people losing their shit, people are losing their shit down in Philadelphia over Sheer Mag. Sheer Mag is one of the hottest up and coming Philly punk band. Talk about a band that didn't exist and was all over everybody's radar, at least down in Philadelphia. Sheer Mag, they released 2 7-inches. They just released a new tune. The tune is called Can't Stop Fighting. Ricky, what do you think of Sheer Mag? Is the hype, do they live up to the hype, or are they overrated?
This wasn't offensive to me. It wasn't something I was super into, so I'm kind of I'm not indifferent. I think it was cool, but I don't think I'd be considered in like within the hyping crowd on this. But I liked it, but I'm not like, you know, dying to, you know, wonder when this album comes out or whatever.
Yeah, I'm with Ricky on that. I don't really listen to this band. But I did check out this new tune, and I did like it, but I don't love it.
Yeah.
I just think it's not the particular sound that I normally listen to on a daily basis. But I am open to checking out more things from them.
Yeah, people in Philadelphia are insane. This band sells out wherever they go in Philadelphia. I mean, and, you know, they're getting Pitchfork mentions. This is a very cool band, if you will. People are freaking out over them. I like them. I don't love them. People make comparisons to Thin Lizzy. I think that's a little overstated, but it does have that, I guess, Thin Lizzy-like, very majestic, powerful vibe to it. Except for with them, I feel like they build up to about 7, but then they never blow out. They never go to like 9 or 10. They never really blow it out. They kind of get up to 7 and hover in that mid range and never really go crazy. I think their singer, I think her name is Dina or Tina, I forget her name. I think she's a really, really good singer. She's got a great voice. The band is great. I just wish they would get a little bit crazier, a little bit more wild in their musicianship. But we'll see what happens. So right now, I'm not dissing the band. I do think they're a little overrated, but I think they have the potential to live up to what everyone's saying. I just kind of think maybe the crowd is going along with this. Oh, this is the greatest band ever. And they're good. They're not great for me yet, but they could be great. So we'll see. Speaking of a band that people are also losing their shit over, Dag Nasty is back together. But not only is Dag Nasty back together, the original Dag Nasty is back together with their first original singer, Sean Brown. As you remember, a couple of years ago, Dag Nasty released their demo. It was like Dag 8 songs with Sean or whatever. Ricky, you were talking a little bit. You're a big Dag Nasty fan, or at least a big fan of the first record. Are you excited that Dag Nasty is back together? Are you excited to hear the 7-inch? And I mean, anymore, like, is this surprising at all? Like, it seems like every band has reunited. What band has, people said Black Flag would never reunite, and Black Flag reunited in two forms. So, I mean, is this surprising at all? Is there any reunion that can surprise you, or are you excited for this?
Well, in terms of any reunions that can surprise me, it's the ones where the band members hate each other.
Like, what was the problem? Like, the Misfits, obviously.
Misfits, Dead Kennedys, like, those two.
That would be surprising.
And Fugazi would be incredibly surprising.
No, but they don't hate each other. They're all friends.
Yeah, but, I mean, is that really ever going to happen?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
That would be surprising, yeah.
I am a Dag Nasty fan. I don't think – I mean, it's not like I have them playing over and over again, but I am a fan. I think they're one of the more – They get overlooked in terms of the bands that have influenced melodic hardcore, I think. I don't think they get talked about enough. I'm excited. I believe they're playing Punk Rock Bowling, so I'm gonna see that. And I'm cautiously optimistic about this 7-inch. I think it's gonna be cool. I is a fantastic record. And
but of course, Sean does not sing on that record. That's Dave Smalley.
Right, right. I'm just saying in general for the band. So yeah, we'll see. I'm looking forward to this. I think it could be a cool thing.
Yeah, I'm totally looking forward to checking them out at Punk Rock Bowling. I'm really glad that I'm going to have the opportunity to see them. I did see a few years ago. there was a Dad Nasty cover band playing on Staten Island, New York, where I am from. and I believe the singer of Can I Say did kind of show up to do a couple songs with the cover band, which was kind of a really cool thing to see in a really tiny space again. But yeah, no, I'm complete, like, you know, my husband has all of the records on vinyl. I don't particularly listen to Dag Nasty all the time, but I do enjoy them.
Hey, we should talk, at the end of the podcast, let's talk about records. Sam's a huge record collector too, right, Sam?
Yes, I love me some records, and I love spinning them as often as I can.
Let's talk about records real quick at the end. So let's wrap this up then. Sam, one of your favorite bands, if not maybe your favorite band, the Bouncing Souls, they're recording a new album. It's going to be the first album after Comet from 2012, which was a very divisive release. Sam, are you excited for the Bouncing Souls records? What do you think it's going to be like? And what do you think of these gigantic pretzels here in the Bouncing Souls PR photo?
I love the Bouncing Souls. If no one can tell by now that I love the Bouncing Souls, I'm telling you right now, I love the Bouncing Souls. I'm actually kind of excited that they are recording a new album. They're working on something. They're working on an album with George Rebello from Hot Water Music. Their new, I guess, yeah, that's old news, I guess, but their new drummer. I was not a fan of Comet too much. I do celebrate their entire catalog, so I do listen to all of it. but I'm hoping that they go back to an older, more, you know, summer vacation-y, maybe Anchors Away, because those are my two favorite albums by them. Direction? We'll see. I don't know.
I'm sort of in a, I wouldn't say love hate, but there's some albums that I did enjoy. Like Summer Vacation, I think is great. I didn't like Comet either. I'm not clearly not as big of a fan of them as Sam is. I think this is worth checking out, and I mean this is also just another huge band, you know, putting out another record for 2016. I think overall 2016 is looking like a really good year for releases.
It's going to be exhausting, 2016.
Yes, it will. Yeah.
And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Why do you guys say that? What are you guys looking forward to?
Well, okay. So let me, believe it or not, I have a list here. Okay. You got Pairs coming out with something with their album on April. You got Pup, you got The Falcon, you got, Against Me is in the studio. NoFX is in the studio. Descendants is in the studio. Dirty Nil. I think Bad Religion said they were recording something. Ray Rocket, his album that we talked about. Andrew Jackson Jihad is in the studio. Morning Glory's new EP, I think, is coming out soon. And Mean Jeans is about to release a 7-inch. That's just what I'm reading off right now.
And I'm super stoked for this Bouncing Souls album. And I have been seeing some posts about a Heart Sounds album, which, if anyone follows me, I love melodic, skate punk, or any of that stuff. So I'm excited.
Oh, I'm sorry. And Off With Their Heads is working, working on an album, too.
You see, I'm looking forward to the new Lost Sarah record. I know Narboots is putting something out. And I can't think of a whole lot else that I'm really looking for. There's a couple of ones that I'm forgetting, but
Morning Glory EP.
Morning Glory EP for sure. The new F'd Up record I'm looking forward to, but that's about it, to tell you the truth. So I don't know. We'll see. Sam, let's talk about records. You want to talk about records for a few minutes?
Sure.
Sam, what cool record scores have you gotten lately? And Sam, unlike myself, but I think similar to Ricky, you collect new records as opposed to used records. Is that correct, or do you collect both?
I collect both. Oh. I am.
Sam, you know, I'm going to tell the listeners about that crazy record store that we went to in Brooklyn that is just like a basement of just like.
Oh, my God.
Tell them about that store.
That place is insane. If you've ever watched Hoarders on, you know, television, it's like the record version of Hoarders. There is piles and piles of records stacked on top of one another, which is not good for the records.
Literal piles, like not even piles. Order, piles.
Like, and it's so bad that if you go down to the basement, I believe it's called The Thing, and I believe it's still there. So if anyone's in the, you know, Greenpoint-ish area trying to go to St. Vitus Bar for some metal drinks, head out there and see for yourself. Essentially, they have records that's a couple dollars to, like, you know, $5, which is great. And some of them are in really great condition, and some of them are in really shitty condition. There are aisles where you cannot even walk through because there's records on the ground stopping you from, like, getting there.
Sam, you remember I was digging down that, like I was shoveling snow. I was, like, digging through
the path. Yeah, you were the biggest, like, trooper in crate digging that day. I was having, like, allergy attacks because I was like, this is too much, John. This is crazy. I was like, I found a Justin Timberlake album. I'm happy. I was like, I can't.
Like, imagine, like, a store with, like, say, it's got, like, two aisles, I think. But instead of being able to walk down the aisles, the shelves are stacked with records. But then the aisles themselves are packed with records literally 5 to 6 feet high. And so I was literally pulling the boxes down, going through the boxes, putting the boxes off to the side and digging through the piles. And honestly, I would say it's about 95% junk. But 5% in there is gold. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, the 5% gold was real gold. Again, I found a Justin Timberlake album, and I was like, what? I can get this for a dollar? Hells yeah. Yes.
So, Sam, what cool records have you gotten lately? Or what cool record stores have you been to lately?
I haven't been to any record stores lately. I've just been going to my normal stomping grounds, which is Academy Annex in Brooklyn, you know, get normal supplies and stuff. I can't even tell you the cool records that I got because it's sitting, I get so many records a day that I actually have a bin that I call the new arrivals section have to, like, put away. Yeah, I have thousands of records. I have to put away in alphabetized order because I have, like, a little bit of OCD when it comes to my record collection. But I do, again, I'm going on vacation next week, so I am taking, well, I guess the week that this airs, I'm taking suggestions for record stores around Tampa and Orlando. So please send them in to me. Thanks. And I do, I have a spreadsheet on my Google of all the record stores that I've been to in the U.S., even one in Hawaii, and record stores that I need to go to. I guess I can share that with John. But, I like to see as many record stores as I possibly can.
Well, Sam, like, what are some of your favorite record stores?
Seriously, like, Amoeba in San Francisco is the best. In L.A. Me and my husband went to Amoeba in San Francisco and in L.A. and spent an entire day there.
It's easy to do that.
Yes, it's really bad because I think we had other things planned, like, you know, go see Hippie Hill or something. Yeah. But, you know, I would rather spend time crate digging than go see some hippies. Reckless in Chicago, I believe, was awesome. There's this place, I think Zia Records in Arizona was amazing. If you were looking for anything new, actually all used as well, they have a huge, like, almost warehouse full of, like, really good things. Like, we went to Arizona 4 years ago and was able to find, like, the first and only pressing of Revival Tour, you know, that Chuck Reagan tour.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there. And we were, like, staring at each other, me and my husband, that is, going, oh, my God, how the hell did we find this? And where the hell did this come from? We're in the middle of the desert in Arizona. But anyways, yes, those are the best record stores I've gone to. Again, Academy Records in New York, in Brooklyn is one of my normal go-tos over here. Generation Records as well. We have been going there ever since we were 15, and I'm quite old now, so yeah.
Last question, Sam. What's the worst record store you've ever been to?
There's a couple record stores that I've gone to, and I can't even remember their names, only because I think I pushed them out of my brain so far and deep back, because I'm never going back there. Pretty much record stores that, like, have nothing, like, but really, really old, like, things that I could find in a dollar bin somewhere, which, you know, I don't normally go that deep into crate digging, but yeah.
Ricky, what are some of your favorite record stores?
I mean, for me, I mean, Amoeba Hollywood is local for me, so that's
what, and I hate him, Sam. What a dick.
So I don't go there.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go there. I really try and limit myself, so maybe once every 2 or 3 months I'll go.
You're too good.
The thing is, like, I'm pre-ordering most of my stuff anyway online, so I have, but I do have a list of stuff that I want to find just at the store that I don't really want to pay shipping for. Amoeba, let's see. I mean, this one place I found out in Fullerton, which is like 60 miles south of me, but oh my God, this place called Revelation Records. I think I talked about it.
Cool.
That place, I mean, it's all punk rock records, some metal, and like that's it. I know I don't buy a lot of old stuff, but I found some stuff from the 80s that I've been looking for online, and I got great prices on them. It's I want to make sure I get the album title right, because it's a little confusing. Okay, I found Apple is some, like, it's just A period P period. You get the point. Plutocracy equals Tyranny and Exploitation. And then their EP, A Sensitive Fascist, is very rare. It's like this super anarcho peace punk kind of thing. And they are so good. And they were so good. They are. I don't even know if they're still around.
No, they're broken up.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
They broke up like before a Leftover Crack show or something. There's like a really funny story about that. They were like fighting on the sidewalk or something like that.
Huh. Well, anyway, that band, I found A Sensitive Fascist is rare at Revelation Records, and that was great. Freak Beat has some okay stuff. It's not they're in Sherman Oaks. And if you're looking for punk records, it's probably not the number one stop, but I do notice in the more mainstream kind of record stores that like carry like, you know, top 40 stuff, the punk sections are starting to grow a bit. And so like I'll go to CD Trader, which is in Tarzana, and I'll go there every once in a while. Actually, I'll find like a bunch of like really cool old stuff there. I found my what did I find there? Hang on. I found that original French pressing of Nevermind the Bollocks there. And then I also found that I found that promo copy of the Ramones' Leave Home there too. And they for some reason they find all, and that one has Carbon and Not Glue on it. For some reason I keep finding these really cool old records there. But yeah. And there's some more I should be going to, but Amoeba totally is the record store that will spoil any record collector.
I didn't know that you were that close to Fullerton. You should go check out Burger Records, man.
I go out there, you know, because, you know, I don't know if you know what the Santa Ana Observatory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's out there. So I'm down there every once in a while. I'll probably be going down there, I think like in 2 weeks, because Leftover Crack is playing and War on Women are playing down there.
Do you just swing by Burger Records? I'm dying to go to Burger Records.
Is it just the label or is it an actual store?
There's actually two stores now. I think it started out as a store and then became a label. I think. Mm-hmm. But Burger Records is a store, and they're a label too. But there's also Gnar Burger in L.A., which is Gnar Records, Gnar Tapes, and Burger Records, which is Gnar Record. Gnar Burger.
Also, we can't forget Rasputin's in the Bay Area too.
God, love Rasputin's.
Yeah, Rasputin's
and Streetlight. I love Streetlight.
I've never been to Streetlight.
Oh, Streetlight's great, man.
Well, that's San Jose area, right?
Well, there was a Streetlight in San Francisco, but I think it just closed up. So now the main Streetlight is down in Campbell, which is next to San Jose. So
yeah,
I love that Streetlight down in Campbell. If you're down in the Bay Area, go check out the Streetlight on Campbell on Bascom Avenue. I used to go there every Friday after work. I love that store. I love that store so much, man. I miss that store. My favorite record stores, you got to check out Amoeba San Francisco. Amazing record shop. Got to check out Jupiter Records out there in Wilmington, Delaware. Got to check out Repo Records down there in Philadelphia. Ricky, let's play Tune and Wrap This Baby Up. What song you got to close out with?
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I was planning. All right. So, Canadian band called Brutal Youth. They have a really, really good take on hardcore. They've been around for a while, but they put out a really good EP on Paper and Plastic last year called Bottoming Out. So, I'm going to play a song called Contrarian by Brutal Youth. Here it is.
And that was Brutal Youth, as played by our very own Brutal Youth, Ricky Frankel. Ricky, thanks for being on the podcast, as always.
Not a problem. Love it.
And Sam B, bringing in the record knowledge, bringing in the Bouncing Souls knowledge, bringing in the Gaslight Anthem knowledge. Thank you for being on the Punk podcast. I hope you're on much more often, Sam B. We love having you on, so thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And we will see you all next week. Well, Adam might be here. Tune in to find out.